It's time once again for Insight with Jack Stogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Stogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Stogler.
And welcome to Insight. And Mr. Jack Stogler is on vacation, so I'm filling in for him. And tonight we're talking with Jason Menchofer, the
Health Commissioner.
I can't remember the exact title of that.
That's all right.
Dr. Barman has some sort of title there, too, but I believe he's the president of the board or something like that.
Well, Dr. Barman actually was the Health Commissioner up until the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
And he's working his way a little bit closer to retirement. So
good for him.
So
he's tried that three times.
That's what I hear. I think he's. I think he has a hard time letting go. But yeah, he was. He just recently, vacated that position, and he was a tremendous asset to the health department while he was with us. I really appreciate his support and guidance over the last two and a half years.
And I'm sure he will answer any questions anytime you have them.
He's already told us don't hesitate to give him a call if we need some guidance.
Yeah. knowing Dr. Barman, he absolutely means that.
Absolutely.
He has good intentions like I've never seen before. He helps anybody do anything, and he's pretty wise and he's pretty smart. So
I agree.
That helps a bunch. So we're going to talk about all kinds of things with the health department. And do you want to talk anything about yourself or anything like that before we go to our first break?
I can tell you a thing or two, I guess. I mean, okay. I've been with the health department here in Mercer County for about 6.5 years. I've been in public health for, let's see, it'll be 24 years this summer. So I've worked out of a couple different health departments. Came up in the environmental health side of things and took on a leadership position a couple years ago, administrator position, which is what I was when I talked to you last which has recently transitioned into the health commissioner role after I completed my master's in public health late last year. So
so you've been busy.
I have, yes.
That'll busy up just doing that without doing your real job.
Yeah, yeah, and then throw the whole COVID thing in on top of it. And I, you know, it all fit in, but looking back, I'm not quite sure how it all fit.
Yeah. So we'll get into what the health department actually does, the function, all that kind of thing, and maybe how many people are involved and that kind of thing, because I'm pretty sure it's more than most of us realize. There's a lot more things that the health department does that we don't have any clue that they do besides, sure. You know, obviously you do something besides go and check out restaurants.
Yes.
That's a definite important thing, but you do more than that.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about talking about the COVID thing. So we'll be back and we'll talk with Mr. Menchofer here just a little bit.
This is Zoe from Brick Street Tavern, and we have some great nightly specials for you. On Tuesday, you can get special prices on our famous wings and draft beers. Wednesday night, get $3 off of any of our large pizzas. And Thursday, you can get our tenderloin basket. On Friday and Saturday evenings, we offer a sirloin steak or all-you-can-eat chicken that both include our salad bar and your choice of potato and a dinner roll. Stop in and see us at Brick Street Tavern for some great home cooking.
Need a better job where the benefits are great. A family-friendly company with competitive pay. Where people stop and greet me when they see my smiling face. Cooper Farms. It's more than a workplace.
Locations in Van Wert, Fort Recovery, St. Henry, Rossburg, and Coldwater. Start at $15.25 an hour for full-time production. Flexible options available too. To apply, visit CooperFarmsJobs.com. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
Hello, I'm Kenny Canote from K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery, Ohio. I'm inviting you to come and see the new Endurance line of litter spreaders from Salford BBI at K&L Tractor. These spreaders are available in pull type and truck mount models and are designed to be the toughest, most durable spreader in the market today. The Endurance wide swath litter spreader is designed with the poultry grower in mind. With Salford BBI's rugged design and construction, you can more efficiently spread your materials, saving you time and money. Come see these remarkable spreaders orders from Salford BBI today at K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
The Fort Recovery Community Club's annual fish fry is coming up on Saturday, January 15th from 4 to 7:30. Stop out at the Progressive Sportman Club on St. Peter Road for their famous fish with all the fixins, coleslaw, baked beans, and more. There'll be hot dogs for the kids if they don't want fish. It's only $10 for all you care to eat, and carryouts will be available, and it's only $5 for kids 10 and under. It's an annual wintertime treat that everybody looks forward to. The Community Club's annual all-you-can-eat fish fry at the Progressive Sportman Club on Saturday, January 15th from 4 to 7:30. The Friends of the Library will be having a used book sale at the library the week of Monday, January 10th through Saturday, January 15th during normal library hours. Here's your chance to get a bargain on a nice selection of used books, audiobooks, and DVDs. Proceeds from the sale will be used to purchase materials and equipment for the library. Be sure to stop by and check out the bargains anytime during the week of January 10th through 15th at your library during their used book sale. Head up to your library to find some treasures January 10th through 15th during normal library hours.
During normal library hours is what it's supposed to say. Got cut off for some reason. So we're back on Insight with Mercer County Health Commissioner Jason Menchofer. And we're going to talk about what the health department actually does. And you can start wherever you want and go whichever direction you want.
All right. Well, I think over the last couple of years, people have become very familiar with one aspect of what we do, and that is navigating all of this, the COVID pandemic and the communicable disease investigations, isolation, quarantine, all that kind of thing.
Yep.
But we do have several other functions as well. The health department is generally organized into, I'd say, four categories. We have an environmental health division, a health services division, which is the nurses, administrative group, and then we have a couple of people who are involved with emergency preparedness and response, which also has come into play, especially in the earlier stages of the COVID pandemic. So I guess I'll go back to the top of my list, the environmental health division. I think you mentioned before break, checking out restaurants, doing those inspections. That's one of the things that they do. They have, I think, 12 or 13 different programs that the sanitarians are involved with, licensing, inspection, sometimes enforcement. Mm-hmm. Some of those are, as you said, the food safety program with the restaurants and grocery stores. We also regulate the installation of private water wells, septic systems. We do licensing and inspections of recreational facilities like public swimming pools, campgrounds, and also solid waste disposal facilities, and we also respond to a variety of complaints having to do with basic sanitation, safety, among other things.
Now, does that include things like junky properties, or is that completely up to townships and municipalities?
Well, that's an interesting question. It depends on your definition of junk, and solid waste is the terminology that we use. But when you get into things like junk cars or piles of scrap metal or old appliances or things like that sitting out, oftentimes that's more in line with what the townships and the villages regulate.
All right.
Our people become involved in situations where somebody's got a pile of bags of garbage or something like that.
So that's, most of the time, that isn't a big deal for you as far as private property management.
It's not the biggest thing we do, but we do get involved. Whether it's garbage or even sometimes if there's a malfunction of a septic system or a broken sewer line in town, we'll get the call on those kind of things.
Yep.
And that's what I did, prior to my current role.
Yep. So I'll let you get back to your list. Sorry about that.
But feel free to break in anytime you have a question. Then our health services division, the nursing division, that's probably something that a lot of folks are familiar with, especially if they are parents or if they're young enough to remember going to get their vaccinations or immunizations at the health department. That is one of the major functions of that division. So we, in addition to the COVID vaccinations that you hear about and the flu shots, we also give a broad range of routine immunizations that have helped keep communicable diseases at bay, things like tuberculosis, tetanus, whooping cough, measles, mumps, all of those kind of
things. The MMR, rubella.
Yeah, exactly. Rubella.
Yep.
So we provide those on a regular basis. That is becoming a little bit less of a focus, or I shouldn't say less of a focus, but we're doing a smaller volume of those services nowadays, primarily because there are other providers in the community that are starting to pick those up and also offer, you know, some of the private physician practices and things when they have.
So some of the physicians, some of the pharmacies.
Pharmacies are also offering vaccinations as well.
Yep, so that makes it a little more convenient for people that don't live in Salina. But
right.
But and with if you're doing pharmacists and doctors, you know somebody's that's highly qualified and legally ethical. That it's going to be done the right way. So
yes.
And that takes some pressure off of you guys.
It does. And it's something that, like I said, it's been a big part of what we do, but really at the heart of public health, it's more about, ensuring the health or helping to promote the health of the general population, regardless of how we get there. So, you know, we don't really care whether you come to us to get your immunizations or whether you go to your doctor,
right,
as long as it's happening and we're helping to prevent disease in the community.
Yeah, that's very important. And, you know, everybody knows that, you know, maybe not everybody, people my age know what a deal tuberculosis was 70 years ago, that you know, and we've basically wiped that out, and polio and things like that don't happen much anymore. Are there still occasional cases of tuberculosis?
Yeah, it pops up occasionally, and there are fairly specific processes on how to deal with that when it does. Our nurses, I know, occasionally will be engaged in what's called direct observed therapy, where when someone is diagnosed with tuberculosis, there's a course of medicine that they have to take in order to, I guess, basically eradicate that infection. And
we can't let that get going.
No. And it's considered to be serious enough and important enough that they will actually go out, or now sometimes virtually, as the patient or the person who's got tuberculosis is going through that course of medicine. Mm-hmm. One of our public health nurses will actually observe them on a daily basis, taking the medicine that they need to take to make sure that they don't, you know, reach a point like we might sometimes where we're taking medicine that's prescribed to us and, well, yeah I've got 3 days left, but I feel better, so I don't need any more of this. Yeah. And I want to make sure that doesn't happen.
And there's probably a few medications that actually works, but probably not many. Not serious ones for sure.
Right. I think that's the exception to the rule. And, you made an interesting comment about people now, you know, maybe not being able to relate to how serious tuberculosis is. And it made me feel a little bit older not too long ago whenever I was in a conversation with one of the people at work, and somebody mentioned that they had talked with a young doctor who didn't know what chicken pox looked like. And, you know, all, even in, you know, my generation, we all grew up, eventually you figured you were going to get it. And then once it ran its course, you were more or less immune. But there has been, you know, an immunization for chicken pox now for quite a few years. I think my kids, who are adults now, got that immunization when they were very young. And so it's just, kind of a little bit mind-boggling to think, well, now we've got doctors out there that have never seen chickenpox because it's been so long that it's been more or less eradicated. Yeah. I mean, it'll show up once in a while.
Yeah, that's really good.
It is, yes.
But that makes it a little tougher on that young doctor, when something comes up, they don't have any idea what it
right, right. And that was what that conversation yeah. centered wow. around. I think there was a thought of possibly misdiagnosing something else as chickenpox because yeah. they weren't sure.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. We also have what we refer to as our administrative division is made up of a handful of individuals. But some of the things that that they do, one of the things that, that a lot of people have used, especially over the last few years with the new compliant driver's licenses and the requirements for different forms of identification, is we have a vital statistics registrar who issues birth and death certificates. And so when people need that, maybe they've misplaced their birth certificate, they need it for a passport or driver's license mm-hmm. or whatever, they will come to us to get that. We also now have a feature that I guess we've had it for, I don't know, maybe close to a year now, where people can go online and actually place an order online and have their birth certificate mailed to them, or mm-hmm. or they can pick it up at the office when it's convenient for them. And that is, we can provide birth certificates for people who are born anywhere in the state of Ohio.
Oh, okay. And so it doesn't have to just be that county then?
Correct.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That used to not be that way, correct? Or
correct. It has been that way for, I'm going to say, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years that we've been able to do that.
Since they figured out that computers can actually do that. And, right. and I'm sure people had to sit at every county and input that information into the computer, so that doesn't happen in a half a day.
Right, right. And I think a lot of that was done even down at the state level. But mm-hmm. yeah, it takes some time to yeah. build that system out.
Yeah.
But now we've got that capability, and it's even a little more convenient. You know, we might have somebody who was born somewhere in Ohio, but they've moved out of state. Well, instead of them yeah. having to take a day and make a trip,
yeah.
they can have it mailed to them. They can order yeah. it online. It's yep. convenient that way. Then we also have a couple people who are involved in emergency preparedness and response activities. They'll collaborate with local partners like fire and law enforcement, mm-hmm. hospital, long-term care facilities, and develop plans and conduct exercises to prepare for eventualities of, you know, things that could pop up and cause threats to public health, mm-hmm. Things like a pandemic, which yeah. we had prepared for years in terms of these plans and tabletop exercises and functional exercises where you actually make phone calls and send emails. But those things were usually a half a day, maybe a day and a half.
Yeah.
And even though we kind of knew the motions that we were supposed to go through, we weren't necessarily prepared for
yeah.
the longevity that this yeah. thing has presented to yeah. us.
And long and deep, and it yes. just goes on a long time. While I'm kind of thinking about it, you mentioned birth certificates, that type of thing. Are birth certificates, and you may not know for sure, a legitimate form of voter ID?
I do not know that for sure. Okay. I can't speak for the Board of Elections, okay. but
I didn't know if that was something that you knew for sure. We will have them on before the sure. the primaries, so we'll check with them too. But if you're even sort of thinking about getting a passport, you need to have your birth certificate, and might as well do that as soon as you can. You know, when the one you send to them isn't going to expire. So right. if you have it sitting in the drawer, just remember which drawer you put it in. But
that's
if you have
the
it sitting
problem.
In the drawer for 2 or 3 years or 10 years, it's still the same information. So
yes.
Anything else you want to cover there? I keep interrupting you. So
no, you're fine. I think we've pretty well covered kind of the different sections of the health department. One of the growing focuses of local health departments in this day and age is population health, community health. So we look beyond the things like immunizations and inspections and things, and we work with partners like the hospital and mm-hmm. Social service agencies, schools, and others to try to engage the community. We do community health assessment every 3 years where we try to determine what the biggest needs are and what people's concerns are in the community, and then follow that up with a community health improvement plan.
So how does that happen? How does that assessment happen?
Well, traditionally we have used a survey. Mm-hmm. It used to be a mailed survey that went to a certain number of randomly selected households in the county. Mm-hmm. The past time around that we did the community health assessment, which actually started in 2019, I believe, and was kind of interrupted for a while, and we wrapped it up this fall, we did an online survey as our primary what we call a primary data collection tool. We can also pull a lot of data from other sources like, state databases and even national sources of mm-hmm. health information, and pull all of those things together and try to paint the picture of what's going on in the community. And then from that, our group of partners will select usually about three high priorities for the community and things that we want to address in a community health improvement plan, which is underway right now.
So what would an example of a couple of those things be over the last several years?
Over the last several years, and like I said, we do it every 3 years basically because that's mandated. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, those priorities probably aren't going to change every 3 years.
Right.
So it's been relatively stable over the last several years, and right now we are looking at proper diet and physical activity. Mm-hmm. Maintaining a healthy weight has a lot to do with preventing a lot of chronic diseases, high blood pressure, heart disease, and
things
like that.
Well, now you tell me.
Yeah. Right. No, better late than never, right?
I guess.
And we are also focused in on mental health and substance abuse.
Yeah. Those have gotten, the substance abuse has grown quite a bit. The awareness of mental is fairly new, although it's been around for all of mankind, probably in different forms. But is that something that you guys have to learn a bunch of new techniques, or have things been there, or do you have, or do you just make sure you get them referred or kind of talk to the proper people? Is that anything that's actually done through the health department, or just kind of push them toward the right way?
It's more the latter. We're not in the mental health business. I guess mm-hmm. we don't really offer any mental health treatment, but part of the role of the health department is to help identify what the needs are in the community, also identify the resources that are available, and be able to help promote those things and mm-hmm. refer people in the right direction where we have the opportunity. And I think it's been, even on a community-wide basis, I would say from my experience, it's been less of a matter of developing maybe new things, but promoting awareness, mm-hmm. Making sure people know what resources are available. And one of the changes that I think you're starting to see, like you said, mental health problems have probably been with us since mankind.
Yeah.
But over most of history, I think there's been a stigma that goes along with
yes.
seeking help mm-hmm. for those things. So,
we need to let people know that's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength, that you know there's a problem and you're going to go take care of it.
Right. And I think there's progress being made there, but there's still plenty of work to do.
Yes.
I think, what we would like to see is a mindset across the community, just with people in general, mm-hmm. that it's just as acceptable to go to a counselor or a psychiatrist to work on your mental health as it is to go to your family doctor if you've got some sort of a persistent yeah. stomach ache or respiratory yeah. infection.
And to be real honest, until the last 10, 12, 15 years, since I don't have those problems, I kind of have the perception of that's not real, and that is not correct. Those are real for some people, portion of the population, and that is not, I have diabetes. Well, people don't make fun of me for it. Every once in a while, somebody's like, oh, why don't you have another cookie?
Right.
You know, but, you know, there's no real stigma with that.
Right.
And a pretty good percent of the population has some sort of that or pre-diabetes. But with mental health, people are stigmatized, and that definitely, it's just a thing that happens to people. Now, mine was mostly my fault. Most of the mental illness is not really, illness might not be the right word, but you know, difficulties and little things, those aren't really, they didn't cause them themselves. It's usually some sort of genetic, I think, or, you know, with the, some situation that, you know, I eat too many cookies, so yeah. I have diabetes.
Right.
They didn't do this, this, and this, and end up with, and sometimes it's trauma from loss of family or something. A whole bunch of, that's a gigantic span of things that can be involved in it, and it can't be stigmatized. You just make sure if you see somebody with problems, don't be standing back and making fun of them. Try to help them, get them, you know, empathy goes a long way, and make sure that, you know, if you can kind of get a little conversation with them privately, make sure that they're seeing somebody, yeah. talking to somebody. There's counselors at schools. There's all kinds of things, pastors, priests, all of that, that are at least minimally trained on that type of thing,
right.
And can and know the resources to pass them on. Sorry, I interrupted all of that.
No, that's fine. And you you said a mouthful there. I mean, it's definitely important to pay attention to those warning signs and refer people to resources. And you know, I've been where you said you were. I mean, when I was younger, I didn't give mental health the weight that it deserves as far as how serious of a thing it is.
Because I didn't have it.
It's not a, yeah, exactly. Neither did I. So it's not a weakness. It's just another illness. I mean, mental illness is a term, and it's something to be recognized. It is a, and it is a public health, issue of concern. So that's, another one of the primary areas of focus with the community health improvement. And then something that we have going on right now is an access to healthcare assessment. And this was really kind of brought on by a requirement of our public health accreditation process that we're going through right now. But when you think about it, it's something that is right in line with the focus of public health and something that we really owe to our community to go out and again do kind of another more specific assessment to determine where are the gaps, where are people having problems getting the care that they need, and what are the issues that are causing those problems. And we've got an online survey right now that's out there that will wrap up this Friday. And we've also done some key informant interviews and focus group meetings where we've pulled small groups or individuals with different areas of knowledge together and gathered more information about what some of those issues are that we're facing as a community. The next step, the more meaningful step and more challenging step, is to move forward then this next year with coming up with a plan to do something about some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think we have the people, the assets in this area to take care of most of the problems you've seen with these surveys, assessments, I guess?
I think we have a lot of great assets, you know, great people here in the community. And you know, we haven't had a chance to look at the information as a whole. I've taken a peek at the survey results a few times. One of the issues that some people talk about is that we maybe don't have enough specialists right here in the area. Mm-hmm. But I guess the flip side of that is, do we have enough demand to keep those people busy here
Correct.
In our rural areas?
Yeah. Or so, is it easier to send them to an hour away, Lima, Fort Wayne, Muncie, Dayton?
Right.
Or even farther, 2 hours, Toledo, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Columbus. And you know, people do that a lot with cancer and things like that, to those
Absolutely.
Specialist places. And some of the specialists have set up satellites in this area where they're around one or two days a week or something. So, yeah. And but yeah, those people have to. They can't just sit there and hope somebody comes in,
right?
Like a shoe store with three or four customers a day, or 20, or whatever it might be,
right?
And hope somebody comes in. They have. Especially with the insurance stuff, they have a huge amount of people, they staff they have to pay, and that doesn't yes. include any medical staff. That's just people that do all the stuff behind the scenes. So that
right.
they have to be profitable, or they can't be here. So sometimes it is we do need to send them a little farther away, but you know, Lima's not that far, and you know, sometimes there's some of those in Sydney or Wapakoneta or something that's even closer. So is this a good time to take a break, and we can, or you want to get some more you want to cover before we take a little break here?
Well, I'll just kind of finish up what we were about by saying that
I've interrupted you so many times I don't know if we're finished or not.
No, you were certainly contributing and going right in the direction that my mind was going. So yeah, it is, you know, it's more complex than just saying we need more doctors here, we need more specialists.
Yeah.
But the thing that we see on the other side of that whole specialist thing, where you talk about sending people to Lima or Fort Wayne or Dayton, is that we see a certain subset of our population that has challenges with transportation.
Yes.
Or even we talked about mental health, you know. Yeah. It was brought to my attention not too long ago. I'd never really thought about it. You take somebody that's suffering from anxiety and who is used to our environment right here in Mercer County, Fort Recovery, Salina, whatever, and you send them to a city to drive to a doctor's office they've never been to, that's going to be a difficult thing for that person. So access to healthcare is a complex issue, but we are trying to make some strides in tackling that here. It won't happen overnight, but that's another one of our initiatives right now.
Yep. All right. So we'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about some other things, including coronavirus and all that kind of mess, and figure out what's right and what the correct information is, what we're going to get from our health department. Back in a minute.
Klingchern & Sons Trucking Incorporated is a family-owned and operated business in Burkittsville. They have over 50 years of experience, and they pride themselves on their commitment to punctual transportation and exceptional customer service. They offer local and long-haul transportation. They have dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers. They have great employment opportunities as well. Visit their website at klingchernandsons.com or call them at 937-338-5000. Call Klingchern & Sons Trucking for all your transportation needs.
Hi, this is Dave Hall from Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, your local Case IH and Kubota dealer. If you're considering purchasing equipment from us during this next year, please talk to us as soon as possible. Right now, we have a lot of equipment on order for stock, probably more than we've ever had in the past. But adding to our list of already ordered equipment is getting harder and harder. So talk to one of our salesmen soon. Hopefully we have the equipment for you already on its way. Hall Brothers, your Case IH and Kubota dealer in Fort Recovery.
Are you looking for great food fast? Call Miracle Lanes at 375-4274 and let them do the cooking. You want wings, but the kids want pizza? No problem. Everybody can get what they want. Wings, pizza, great sandwiches, subs, fried goodies. Just call them, then drive through and pick it up. And call Miracle Lanes to reserve your lanes for your kid's birthday party or other get-together. Just call them at 375-4274 now and get your party booked. And be sure to stop out on Fridays at lunch for their great pizza and wing buffet with salad bar. Great food and lots of fun at Miracle Lanes. Stop out or call them at 375-4274. Here are the sports broadcasts coming up this week on Fort Recovery Radio. Tomorrow, the Lady Indians will host the Lady Flyers from Marion Local in an MAC game. We'll simulcast WPGW's broadcast with Rob Weaver, and it will also be available on the NFHS network. On Friday, the boys will travel to Marion Local, and Fort Recovery Radio's broadcast team will bring you all the action live. The NFHS video will be available for that game. Due to a cancellation on Saturday, the Lady Indians will now take on the South Adams Starfires at the Forsyth Fieldhouse with both JV and varsity games, with the JV game starting at noon. Make plans now to get to these games, but if you just can't get there in person, you can always listen live right here on Fort Recovery Radio, the home of the Indians. On Monday, the Fort Recovery swim teams participated in a tri-meet with teams from New Bremen and St. Henry. In both boys and girls, New Bremen finished first, Fort Recovery second, and St. Henry third. Top finisher for the boys team was Sage Wendell, finishing first in the 200 free and also in the 500 free, setting a new school record with a time of 5 minutes, 51.06 seconds. For the girls, Tegan Fortkamp won the 100 fly and the 100 backstroke. Joelle Kalp won the 50 free, and Audra Bupp won the 100 breaststroke. And in diving, Melissa Laux won the 1 meter diving. Again, in the tri-meet on Monday, the girls and boys teams finished second, winning several of the events.
We're back on Insight with Jason Menchofer, the Mercer County Health Commissioner. I have to read it so I can get it right. The Mercer County Health Commissioner.
I'm not used to it yet.
So, you know, we've talked about what the Mercer County Health Department does. And I know a lot of people are, you know, they want to know what's the actual things. Facebook sometimes has some misinformation. So
what?
So from the health commissioner, from the official things that we that they have to deal with, that's basically law or regulations or guidelines. Tell us, I guess, from what we need to know. Just tell us what we need to know about the coronavirus Delta Omicron.
Okay. Well. First of all, you mentioned regulations, and as you know, that landscape has changed a lot.
Yes.
In the last, well, starting probably, what, a year ago, maybe, or close to it, where we were operating under all of these mandates from state government, and most of those went away and were replaced with a lot of guidance, and mm-hmm. this is what we should do.
Now, do you have some... leeway on guidelines? Is there much? Do they allow you that?
We do. And you'll see some of that. I think we've maintained a little bit of leeway here with a lot of the recommendations. Okay. You know, the biggest one that a lot of people probably think about is the use of masks or face coverings to help prevent the spread. And whenever the incidence rate dropped way down back over the summer or maybe late spring, those mandates for masks went away. And then when things started to ramp back up again, moving into the fall, CDC came out with guidance with recommendations. The only places now where those are strictly required would be in healthcare facilities and in some employers now, I think with the new OSHA standard, would be required to have employees wear masks in certain situations.
Now that, assuming that gets through all the technicalities and the battles, with the 100 or more employees, are you in charge of making sure that that's all done? Are you enforcing that? Or is that, have they decided yet? Because I know there's one thing back when this first began, this is a rule. Well, they didn't say anything about who's enforcing it, and nobody enforced it in some places, and everybody enforced it in other places. So
my expectation with the OSHA temporary standard for, it involves masks as well as vaccination and testing in lieu of vaccination. And I've read up on that a little bit, and my expectation as of right now is that that will be enforced or is intended to be enforced by OSHA, you know, by the people that enforce the rest of their standards.
Because you definitely don't have enough people to go out and enforce that. You probably couldn't enforce it just in Salina, much less going out all around the county and finding all these places. 100 seems like a pretty good amount of people, but there's probably several hundred of them.
There's a handful of them, and honestly, would be surprised if OSHA has the resources to enforce something like that. Yep. My expectation would be, and what I was led to believe by some of the things I read while I was looking into that recently, was that it will probably be addressed on a complaint basis.
Yep.
Much like our involvement earlier on in the pandemic with violations with masking and gatherings and things, we didn't go out looking for people who weren't following those, but we were obligated to respond if someone complained. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll
kinda
work
like the smoking thing
like that. Yeah. And that's interesting. That went through my head when you were asking who was going to enforce, because when that smoking ban passed, I think it was back in 2007, if I remember right, there wasn't much said about that to the local health departments until it was in place, and then it was like, oh, by the way, it's your job to enforce this in your community.
Oh yeah, we have plenty of money, we'll hire 10 more people. Yeah,
right. So I hope this OSHA thing doesn't go that direction. I don't think it will. But it is a concern. I know we have a lot of people here in our area, especially in a lot of the rural areas of the state, who have chosen not to get vaccinated. And I think it's going to be difficult to comply with this standard because, you know, employers have the option of adopting a policy that would allow for periodic testing. I think it might be weekly testing in lieu of vaccination for employees who choose not to be vaccinated. But it is hard enough to find tests right now for people to get tested when they're symptomatic or when they need to for whatever reason. It's hard to keep those on the shelves now. I don't know how they're going to accommodate.
Well, they're sending 500 million of them out to people, to households, supposedly.
Right.
Where are they going to get them? Have they been sitting somewhere for a while? Are they going to suddenly make 500 million in a day? They come up with these ideas with no way to implement them.
And 500 million sounds like a lot, but what are there, about 350 million people in the country? So even then, that's not necessarily going to last very long. So there are some obstacles there with regard to that standard.
Yep. So let's take another break again, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about some of this stuff, and maybe tell us what the effectiveness of each different kind of mask might be or something like that. So we'll talk a little bit more about it, and we'll get on to other things too. Back in just a minute with the Mercer County Health Commissioner, Jason Menchofer, back in just a minute.
Remember that scene in the Indiana Jones movie where the old knight tells him to choose wisely? Hi, I'm Connor Ramble with Fort Recovery Insurance. When it comes to insurance, choose wisely. Now, I'm not an old knight, but I do know insurance. From farms to factories to cars and ATVs, don't just spin the wheel and choose the first one that comes up. Insurance is too important not to have some local advice on what is wisest for you. ForRecoveryInsurance.com, your local agent for Ohio Mutual Insurance Group.
This is the first thing you hear after the power goes out. Silence. But that doesn't last very long. The next thing you hear is complaining, then the inevitable whining. No TV, no power for laptops and tablets. How long do you think their cell phone will last without a recharge? How about your cell phone? Now's the time to call Reasoner Energy and talk about Generac generators. Not only do they operate quietly, a Generac generator from Reasoner will silence complaining and whining. Call 419-678-4858.
If you're trying to come up with great meal ideas for your family this winter, let Wayne Street Market help you out. A great place to start is with their cube steak. Right now, it's only $4.99 a pound. Grab several packages and you'll have a good start for all kinds of meals. Cube steak and baked potatoes in a salad, cube steak and mashed potatoes covered with mushroom gravy, cube steak with hash browns and corn. Anything your family loves, you can get off to a great start with their cube steaks at only $4.99 a pound from Wayne Street Market, the hometown store that saves you more. The Fort Recovery Education Association is sponsoring an all-you-can-eat chili supper on Friday night, January 21st. Serving will be in the high school commons from 4:30 to 6:30 before the boys' basketball game with St. Henry. Tickets will be available at the door for only $6, and kids 5 and under are free. All proceeds benefit the FREA Scholarship Fund. Get to the St. Henry boys basketball game early on January 21st and enjoy the FREA chili supper with all the fixins, serving from 4:30 to 6:30. The Wendoline Sports Club is having their winter barbecue chicken dinner on Sunday, January 23rd. Tickets are only $8 each, pre-sale only, and you can dine in or carry out. Serving is from 4 to 6 p.m. Call Bob Hart at 375-4346 for tickets. Don't miss Wendoline Sports Club's winter barbecue chicken dinner coming up on Sunday, January 23rd, with serving from 4 to 6.
We're back on Insight. Jason Menchofer, Mercer County Health Commissioner. I still have to read it every time. That's exactly how that's supposed to go. So we've talked about what the health department does. We've kind of covered a pretty good amount of the coronavirus stuff and that kind of thing. Just before I forget, and we kind of did, I was going to mention this earlier, there is a levy coming up on the I guess it technically could be the primary ballot in March, April?
It'll be May 3rd, May 3rd, I believe. Okay. Yeah, it's the primary election, and that is correct, Neil. We are attempting to pass a tax levy for the first time ever for a handful of reasons without taking too much time here, because I understand we'll be able to come back and talk in a little bit more detail about that
closer
next
to
month.
To that election, and we will go into very big detail on that. But yeah, if you want to give us a general overview.
So the health department has some revenue needs that we're struggling to meet right now.
Go ask the commissioners.
Right.
They're made of money. They just like the federal government. They just print some.
I wonder if any of them are listening. We'll see if we get some feedback on that tomorrow. But the commissioners sort of play a role in this to some extent. And a lot of people probably don't realize it, but the health department is not a county agency in the same sense as a lot of the other county agencies,
really?
Like the county engineer and some of those other agencies.
Yeah.
Because we have our own board of health, we don't answer directly to the commissioners, and they don't have as much responsibility for us as they do for some of the other agencies.
I had no idea.
Right. And a lot of people don't. So that's one of the things that is important to know. And
is that the same in every county?
Yeah, in Ohio.
Probably. That's except maybe some of those huge counties, maybe, but the counties we care about.
And there might be a difference in the way city health departments are made up. They may answer to like a city council instead of the board of health.
But
for a combined or general health district, we are under our own independent board. And so, even though they're not required to, I think maybe at one time they were, but the commissioners have housed us in the Central Services Building there in Salina, along with a lot of the other county agencies for well over 20 years.
Yeah.
And actually have not charged us rent to occupy that space. There's going to be a shuffling reorganization of county agencies coming eventually here in the near future when the Ag Center gets finished out at the Sherrill Ann facility, if you've heard about that.
Yeah.
And at that time, they're going to need the space that we currently occupy in the Central Services Building for another agency. So we're looking for an alternate location to be able to move into a different facility. It will, as far as I know at this point, be a non-county owned facility. So we're going to have a sizable chunk in our budget that we're going to need to provide for rent, maintenance, you know, all the things that go with occupying a building and footing the bill yourself. Another thing that we want to do is to relieve the various political subdivisions of the county of some of their burden that contributes to our budget. So we currently collect funding from all of the townships, the villages, and the city of Salina every year through a mechanism called Inside Millage. And basically, they all combined supply almost $300,000 of our budget, which is our total budget is near $2 million a year.
I was going to say, that sounds like a bunch of money till you look at the whole budget.
I'm
surprised $2 million will cover it.
But to most of them, it is a bunch of money when you look at, Black Creek Township. or some of the less populated townships having to supply, having to provide some of that money, it puts a strain on their budget as well. So one of the things that we are incorporating into this levy that we're pursuing is enough revenue from the general taxpayers that we would be able to replace what we currently get from the townships, the villages, and allow them to retain that money. From it would start in 23 if the levy would pass this spring, to where they'd be able to put that towards other uses and invest that money right there.
Not to put you on the spot, but do you have any guess like what a town like Fort Recovery, St. Henry, that size of town would be putting into that? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I have no problem telling you. I don't know. Okay. I don't know off the top of my head. I looked at those figures a while back. I was in touch with representatives of almost all of the townships and villages and the city just to kind of get their take on what we were talking about doing and whether they'd be supportive, whether they needed us to give that money back to them or whether they were just fine. Most of them said they would appreciate having that money back.
I'm sure because it's tens of thousands of dollars for each entity.
I would say, especially for the more populated ones, there are probably a few townships out there that pay less than that. But it's a chunk of money, and it's something that they could do a lot of good with, whether it's, you know, one village I talked to said, well, yeah, that if we had that money at our disposal, that would allow us to purchase a truck for one of our departments each year to keep current and keep their vehicles well maintained. Yep. So that's another big part of what we're hoping to do by getting that revenue through a tax levy.
Yeah. Well, levies have gone over the last 10 years, maybe even more than that. The county almost always supports things like that. The new jail, TriStar building out there. TriStar passed with 75% of the vote.
Wow.
People understand that the people they're entrusting their money with are not frivolously just spending it. They are doing things that are important and improving the area. So no more than I know about it, I'm very optimistic about this because our people, they understand that nobody comes to them with something that they're just trying to make things pretty. They're trying to improve everybody's life.
Right.
And obviously we need a health department, and you kind of need a place to work out of.
We do, as much as I didn't mind working from home at times whenever we were doing some of that a couple years ago, we need to be in a facility where we can have people come to us and we can serve them well. And I mentioned before that the focus is increasingly shifting more to population health, outreach, education, things like that, and we would like to be able to shift right along with public health as a whole. That might mean hiring a health educator and someone to be more dedicated to that outreach and promotion. That's another thing that will cost a little bit more money for us. And the other thing about those population health things is, as important as they are, many of them don't generate revenue like immunizations and food licenses and septic permits do. And so that funding has to come from somewhere. And those are a few of the things that we're looking at that are causing us to pursue the levy.
License things, is that where most of your $2 million budget comes from?
No, that's where a lot of the environmental health budget comes from. Mm-hmm. Those programs, most of those programs in environmental health are designed to be able to be self-funded. The sewage program is one that's kind of complicated. You know, we had a lot of major changes in that program about 15 years ago, and it got to a point where we had to spend so much time on the different steps involved with that program that we really couldn't justify. We didn't feel we could charge people enough for permits to cover all of our costs. So we do have to subsidize some of those things. The immunizations have been a big revenue generator over the years. They're also a big expense. I mean, our budget for purchasing vaccines, I believe this year is somewhere around $750,000. And so, that's all money that we can recover because...
Does that get recovered from the federal government or insurance companies or a combination of all of that?
Most of it gets recovered through insurance. We do bill insurance. We've been doing that for quite a few years. Yeah. We do have some clients who will pay out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And there are also programs probably passed down from the federal level, but we interact with the state level, mm-hmm. both for adults and for children, that allow us that have government-funded vaccine that we receive. Of course, that's not part of our budget because Correct. We don't spend anything on yeah. it, just like mm-hmm. the COVID vaccine.
But you do pay people to administer
we
it.
Do,
or,
we do.
Or to distribute it if right. it goes to other places. It, yeah.
But they do give us the capability to provide those services mm-hmm. for people who can't afford them otherwise.
That's good. So... As I think we talked a little bit about it, but so out of the $2 million bucks, a lot of that stuff is done with permits and that type of thing. The rest of it comes from?
Well,
federal?
Like I said, about $300,000, like I mentioned before, comes from our local political mm-hmm. subdivisions.
Yeah.
And we do have a variety of grants that come down from usually the state. A lot of times that's passed through from federal, but we deal with the state for some of the vaccinations. The public health emergency mm-hmm. preparedness is funded by a grant.
Yep.
We have received a lot of government funding to help offset our costs with the COVID response, all the way back to whenever we basically had to drop everything and yeah. do
yeah.
all COVID all the time.
Yeah.
We weren't bringing in that money that we would have been bringing in, giving people yeah. shots and doing the other things. And fortunately for us, we were able to receive funding to offset the majority of those costs. And that has kept us whole here over the last couple of years. But if we took all of that grant funding for COVID out of the picture, the situation certainly wouldn't be as good for us financially right now.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a good thing at all. So that those kind of things, you know, we take those kind of things for granted. Every department, even though you're technically not under the commissioners, all of those county offices we just kind of take for granted. That's in our tax money, and we don't worry about it. And we just right. assume that they're making they're able to survive and do the things they need to do, and that isn't always the case. So right. Anything else you want to cover on any of that?
I think one other thing I will mention with regard to the levy, just so people know who are listening and who might have some interest, is the millage that we're looking for.
Yeah.
It's a 0.55 mil levy. And that is designed to generate somewhere in the neighborhood of $630,000 of revenue annually.
And so you're thinking that the other $1.4 million you can get through licensing fees and grants?
Right, fees okay. and licensing, service fees, grants, you know, okay. fees on immunizations mm. and services that we're still providing.
So you're not trying to raise the whole $2 million, you're raising about a third of it.
No, we're not trying to raise any more than what we absolutely need to mm-hmm. maintain our variety and our level of services that people have come to expect.
And
to
maintain the building you're going
to
end up
right, in. To be able to get that into a location, a facility that will meet our needs and allow people to allow us to give people the service that they deserve and a place that's convenient. And what that 0.55 mils really comes down to that's going to be of interest to property owners who might be listening. You know, this is on property tax. For the owner of a $100,000 home, according to the tax estimator on the county auditor's website, that amounts to $19.25 per year.
Can I pay mine now? Can I just give you $20?
I don't have a receipt book with okay. me. But.
I don't need one for only $20. So for $20 a year, basically what's that come out to? 8 cents a day, 7 cents a day?
Something like that.
Probably yeah. not even that. Do you have a great health department that takes care of all the stuff that they already take care of?
And so, and that's what we're striving for, is to continue to offer the services that we do and to improve the way that we do those things as much as we can.
Yeah, and when this levy passes, it's basically free. $20, you'll never notice it on your property tax. If anybody notices an extra $20 on their property taxes, there's a whole bunch of other reasons why, you know, property tax values are going up, so your property taxes will go up. It'll be, you know, for most people, it's nothing. It's basically nothing.
And one thing I'll mention, too, that was of interest to me in talking with our county auditor as we were planning this and deciding, you know, what the appropriate amount was, how much we need, and how to do that. I asked him one day when I was talking to him, you know, how this affects people that own a lot more property, particularly farmers. Mm-hmm. And I was comforted to hear from him that when it comes to tax valuation purposes, farmland acreage is not valued anywhere near the amounts that people actually pay to buy it nowadays.
Yes.
I believe it might have been somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,000 an acre or something like that.
Yeah.
When they look at that for tax purposes. You know, we're a huge farming community, and I certainly didn't want to go out there and, and be trying to gouge our farmers
to pay our bills. There's plenty of them that have 1,000 acres.
Right.
They're not the ones, they're not going to get hit really much harder than anybody else.
Right.
It's going to be pretty well distributed. They try to do that as much as they can with any of the property tax things.
I appreciated that because, like I said, I didn't want to cause an undue burden for that part of our community by any means.
No. So just real quick, masks. Can you kind of go through like the M this and the MN95s and all that kind of stuff? What the basic uses and efficiency of what those things actually do.
Yeah, we can talk about that a little bit. And, you know, I guess I'd like to start by just kind of mentioning what the current guidelines are. And, you know, as I said before, these are guidelines now. There's no mask mandate in most cases. And, you know, we haven't really pushed the masks too hard in recent months, especially over the summer whenever there wasn't a whole lot of transmission. We're starting to lean into that a little bit more now. Now that we're seeing almost record numbers of cases, fortunately they're not, you know, a lot of them aren't serious, but the general recommendation is people older than 2 years old, should wear masks in indoor areas if they are not vaccinated, or even if they're fully vaccinated, if they're in an area with substantial or high transmission, which describes the entire state of Ohio right now. I'll be honest, one of the things I've been wrestling with is even getting stricter with masks at the health department. Since the mandate went away, we've strictly worn masks on the clinic side and what's more of a healthcare type environment, but on the office side, not so much. But we're getting back to the point where it might be helpful to do that. So the most important purpose of a mask, really, the way we look at it here, is for source control. So if I have the virus, or if I've had it recently, or if I've been exposed and I'm not sure I might have it, it benefits you if I wear a mask, because if I sneeze or cough or whatever, it's going to help contain the airborne droplets that carry the virus. And a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people argue that, oh, those masks aren't going to stop a virus. Viruses are tiny. But it's important to remember that the viruses are on those liquid droplets. So
the virus isn't just jumping around by itself. It's on those.
Especially when it's only a few feet away from the person who's expelling it from their respiratory system. So I just think, when I think about it, I just think of a visual, and I would never do this, but if I was to sit here and spit in your general direction right now, you'd probably feel it.
Yeah.
If I put any kind of a mask on, you're probably not going to feel it.
Right.
So nothing is going to be 100% effective as far as masks go, but anything is going to help stop that droplet transmission. Mm-hmm. But back to your question, you know, the N95 masks and some of the masks that you can buy in the hardware store that people might wear blowing insulation, even our N95 masks, and those, when they're properly fitted, you got a good tight fit, preferably you've been fit tested to wear one, but that's not normally going to happen unless you wear one professionally. Those are going to be the most effective. Probably next most effective of the masks that we see would be like the surgical or procedure masks, the masks that you see people wear in doctor's offices,
like that ear paper-ish ones.
Yeah. You got kind of a fiber. Mm-hmm. You got the ear loops, and they've got the wire that you can pinch it down over your nose and get a really good fit. And those are going to be less effective than the N95, but probably more effective than a cloth mask or a gaiter. Those tend to not necessarily fit as well, where there's more places for droplets to escape. So actually, I believe the N95 is the only commonly available mask that's really recognized as an effective layer of protection for you on the receiving end. Mm-hmm. If I cough or sneeze in your direction, it's actually, if it gets past my mask or I'm not wearing a mask, an N95 that's properly fitted is actually going to afford you more protection considerably than the other types of masks are. So, we are starting to encourage people more that, especially if you're in an indoor environment and you're in close proximity to people that you are not normally exposed to, it might not hurt to wear a mask to help kind of slow this thing down a little bit and get us back towards normal again.
Yeah, because we want to get back to something that at least resembles normal. Absolutely. 2 years ago, we were begging for normal, and it's only going to take a month. And now we're going to settle for close to normal 2 years later.
It's been tough, and it's we continue to try to work our way out of it, but
we'll get there someday.
I hate the term new normal. I want the old normal
back. Old normal is what we're after now. That the virus will be like the flu, it'll be with us every year, and we may have to take a flu shot or flu/virus shot every year. Nobody knows any of that stuff yet, but those are all things that could happen. But
that's an excellent point, and I know we need to wrap this up. But
if it's important, we need to talk about it.
Well, I just want to kind of reiterate what you said. I mean, you just kind of described what the end game is here, and that is getting to the point where we have enough immunity in the population that this coronavirus goes from a pandemic to what we call endemic, like the flu.
Yeah.
It's something that's just always circulating in the population, but we've developed enough immunity both through acquired infection and through vaccinations that it no longer puts a lot of people in the hospital. It no longer threatens to overwhelm the healthcare system. And when we get there, we can deal with that just like we do the flu and other diseases that circulate in the population.
Yep, so, colds and stuff, yeah.
Right.
Yep. So anything else you need to throw at us before we shut down your part and head to Rockerville with his This Day in Pop Culture History?
I think we're good. I think I'll move over and let Rocker take over.
So if somebody has some questions, is there a phone number, email, website that they should check with where you can give them the information they might be looking for?
Sure. We have, I believe, up-to-date information on availability of vaccination and possibly testing supplies on our website. That is at mchdohio.org. And we also welcome people with questions if they're not answered online on our website to call the office at 419-586-3251.
3251. Most people know the 419-586.
Yep. That
3251.
That phone will be answered from 7:30 to 4 o'clock weekdays. And if they, I'm not going to give it out over the radio, we'll make them work for it a little bit. But my cell phone number is buried on our website at the bottom of the front page. That's always there, too.
But, you know, a lot of times you're in the middle of things and you can't answer that phone. If they want an answer, it's best to do the 3451.
Yeah. The 3251.
There's always somebody going to answer that phone.
My number's out there as more of an emergency or after hours contact. So we do try to be as responsive as we can when those needs arise.
Right. Yep. So, all righty. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get with Rocker on his This Day in Pop Culture History. And we'll be back right after this.
Boar's Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boar's, where Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boar's Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boar's Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Need a better job where the benefits are great? A family-friendly company with competitive pay, where people stop and greet me when they see my smiling face. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
We're offering $1,000 sign-on bonuses for maintenance and CDL drivers. To apply, visit CooperFarmsJobs.com. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
Hi, this is Chad Guggenbiller with CSG Consulting Finance and Brokerage in Fort Recovery. 2022 begins an interesting business year. Has your business experienced change within your operation? Or maybe you've undergone the loss of internal critical personnel, a trusted banker, or advisor? Now more than ever, you need a strategy and a plan of action on how to navigate these challenges in your business. Let me help with this plan. See me, Chad Guggenbiller, at 419-852-4049. CSG Consulting, your partner in planning.
Fort Recovery High School Cheerleading Squad will be holding a cheerleading fun day for kids from kindergarten through sixth grade. This fun day will be on Saturday, January 22nd from 8:30 a.m. until noon, with sign-in beginning at 8 a.m. in the Commons. The cost is $20 per child and includes a t-shirt if you sign up by Tuesday, January 4th. Fort Recovery students through sixth grade received their sign-up sheets at school, and the sign-up sheets are also available on the Fort Recovery Cheerleading Facebook page. The kids will learn chants, cheers, and a dance from the high school cheerleaders, and there will be a parent preview at noon, and the kids will perform at halftime of the boys' JV game that night in the Fortsite Fieldhouse. This is an event that the kids and our fans look forward to every year, so be sure to get your kids signed up for this fun cheerleading camp taking place on Saturday, January 22nd. Be sure to sign up by January 4th to get your t-shirt.
We're back on Insight. We just heard from Jason Menchofer, Mercer County Health Department. And if you missed some of that, or there's a lot of information, and if you didn't memorize all of it, this will be in the archives probably a couple of hours from now. Takes us a little bit after Sports Talk's done to get it in the archives, but it'll be there, and you can go back and listen to it as many times as you want. So, and we do have plenty of people that do that. We have, I think, I didn't see our numbers for last year. Year before, we had 67,000 plays in our archives in a year's time. So 1,200 or so a week, almost 200 a day.
How many of those are people rewatching the Christmas gala?
Some of them are. There's all kinds of stuff. Some people listen just to basketball. Some people listen just to sports talk. Some people go deep in the archives and listen to Breakfast with Bill featuring Rocker.
I still haven't found that.
You have to go back about 50 or 60 pages. So scroll down to go to our archives, scroll down to the bottom, and it'll list all these pages. Just keep going till you can start finding them. Anyway, we have Rocker doing his This Day in Pop Culture History. Is that right?
Yes, we got some good ones for you, Neil.
Oh, goody.
1935, Amelia Earhart becomes the first woman to fly solo from Hawaii to California, which you would think really not that big of a deal, but
back in 35 it was.
I mean, as the first woman, and it's
probably only the second person to do it. Of course, there might have been somebody, might have been a few men that did that. But
of course, her next flight didn't do so well. But
yeah, well, she didn't finish that part strong. She didn't get clear across the Pacific that time.
1938, Morse code is introduced by Samuel Morse.
1838, you mean?
Well, it says on here 1938.
Well, Samuel F.B. Morse, they did it in the Civil War, so I'm going to say they missed it by 100 years.
I checked it again and just to make sure, because I was thinking the same thing, and they got it down as 1938.
Well, they're wrong, but that's okay.
You can't win them all.
The 38's probably right, but yeah, Samuel F.B. Morse.
By the way, these are from yesterday.
Oh, well.
Because you always want to do the two-day deal.
Yeah.
1949, WDTV in Pittsburgh becomes the first station on air in Pittsburgh. It's the Dumont Network.
Oh, yes.
Remember those?
Yep, Dumont, yep.
We'll do January 12th.
That's today.
Yes, very, very good, Neil.
Thank you.
Now, here's where things go south.
Oh.
1926, the first Amos and Andy episode radio show airs. That would not fly today.
Nope, that is considered politically incorrect, and I loved that show. Those people
were funny.
Well, you'll never see it. Somewhere you'll be able to find it, but those were very funny, and it did not, to me, put any racial stereotype on anybody. It was just a couple of guys that were kind of doofuses that had some friends, and so it kind of reminded me of the Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney. The couple of doofuses that they're funny. They got themselves in stupid situations, and they got themselves out of it, usually with Calhoun the lawyer.
We got a couple of 1966ers.
Ooh, 1966.
Dr. James Bedford becomes the first person to be cryogenic. Yeah, that word. Frozen. By the way, Walt Disney was not put on ice, literally.
That's good.
Also, the one I'm more excited about.
Ooh, yeah.
Batman premieres on CBS. Starring Adam West and Burt Ward.
Batman.
Oh, yeah.
We're listening to the theme. We'll let that play in the background.
Do we got time for the celebrity birthdays?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, we'll make time. We'll cancel the whole sports talk show if we have to get celebrity
birthdays.
Probably
not a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
From June 11th, we got Naomi Judd, turned 76.
Oh, Mama Judd.
Mary J. Blige, now there's a big drop in age, 51. Crickets on that one.
No, we don't really care.
Amanda Peet turns 50. Another crickets.
Yeah, crickets.
Today, we got Christy Alley turns 71. I can't believe that.
Was she the one on Cheers?
Cheers.
Okay.
Seems. Howard's
how old?
71.
70. She's my age?
Yeah.
She's an old geezer.
There you go, Neil.
She is prettier than I am. Yeah, well, she was. I'm sure she still looks better than me.
Howard Stern turns 68. Our old buddy.
Yep.
Jeff Bezos, Mr. Amazon himself, 58.
Okay. Can't he... give him a couple of $1 billion and knock 10 years off his age?
Maybe.
Okay.
And the last one, Rob Zombie turns 57.
Rob Zombie.
Yes.
57. He's Rob Zombie's only been around 25 years, hadn't he?
I would assume, yes.
So he's 30 something when he finally hit?
Huh. Yeah. Naomi Judd doesn't surprise me.
No.
But the Christy Alley one kind of floors me for some reason.
Yep. I guess I always thought of her as being noticeably younger than me, but just a year.
Crikey. Well, It is 18 after.
I'm
pretty sure the gas is ready to go.
Yeah, I think we better get on with our sports talk. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Bubba and Fee, and I believe they're going to have Mindy Bupp here with the swim team.
He's here.
Back in just a minute.
Thank you for staying tuned to Insight with Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show was being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.